sailed without the garden. They galloped northeastward, opening on the desolate lake and the great fells beyond it. Gable rearing his crag-bound head against the sky, and behind the steep green outline of the screes. Cool, long shadows stole across the tennis lawn. The air was golden. Doves murmured in the trees. Two chaffinches played on the near post of the net. Little water wagtails scurried along the path. A French window stood open to the garden, showing darkly the dining room, paneled with old oak, its Jacobean table bright with flowers and silver and cut glass and Wedgwood dishes heaped with fruit. Green gages, peaches, and green muscat grapes. Lessingham lay back in a hammock chair, watching through the blue smoke of an after-dinner cigar, the warm light on the floor of Dijon roses that clustered about the bedroom window overhead. He had her hand in his. This was their house. "Should we finish that chapter of Nell?" she said. She took the heavy volume with its faded green cover and read. "He went out on the night of the Lord's Day, when 9 weeks were still to winter. He had a great crash, so that he thought both heaven and earth shook. Then he looked into the west part, and he thought he saw thereabouts a ring of fiery hue. And within the ring, a man on a gray horse. He passed quickly by him and rode hard. He had a flaming firebrand in his hand, and he rode so close to him that he could see him plainly. He was black as pitch, and he sung this song with a mighty voice. Here I ride, swift steed, his flank flecked with rime, rain from his mane drips, horse muddy for harm, flames flare at each end, gall glows in the midst, so furnished with flossies reeds, as this flaming brand flies, and so furnished with flossies reeds, as this flaming brand flies. Then he thought he heard the firebrand east towards the fells before him, and such a blaze of fire leapt up to meet it, that he could not see the fells for the blaze. It seemed as though that man rode east among the flames and vanished there. After that, he went to his bed and was senseless for a long time. But at last, he came to himself. He bore in mind all that had happened and told his father. But he bade him tell it to Hjalti's
son. So he went and told Hjalti. But he said he had seen the wolf's ride, and that comes ever before great tidings. They were silent a while. Then Lessingham said suddenly, "Do you mind if we sleep in the east wing tonight?" "What, in the lotus room?"
"Yes."
"I'm too much of a lazy bones tonight, dear," she answered.
"Do you mind if I go alone, then?
I shall be back for breakfast. I like my lady with me. Still, we can go again when the next moon wanes."
"My pet is not frightened, is she?"
"No," she said, laughing. But her eyes were a little big. Her fingers played with his watch chain. "I'd rather," she said presently, "you went later on and took me. All this is so odd still. The house and that. And I love it so. And after all, it is a long way, and several years, too, sometimes in the lotus room, even though it is all over next morning. I'd rather we went together. If anything happened then, well, we'd both be done in, and it wouldn't matter so much, would it?"
"Both be what?" said Lessingham. "I'm afraid your language is not all that might be wished."
"Well, you taught me," said she, and they laughed. They sat there till the shadows crept over the lawn and up the trees, and the high rocks of the mountain shoulder beyond burned red in the evening rays. He said,
"If you like to stroll a bit of a way up the fell side, Mercury is visible tonight. We might get a glimpse of him just after sunset."
A little later, standing on the open hillside below the hawking bats, they watched for the dim planet that showed at last, low down in the west, between the sunset and the dark. He said,
"It is as if Mercury had a finger on me tonight, Mary. It's no good my trying to sleep tonight, except in the lotus room."
Her arm tightened in his. "Mercury," she said, "it is another world. It is too far." But he laughed and said,
"Nothing is too far."
They turned back as the shadows deepened. As they stood in the dark of the arched gate leading from the open fell into the garden, the soft, clear notes of a spinet sounded from the house. She put up a finger. "Hark," she said, "your daughter playing Les Barricades." They stood listening.
"She loves playing," he whispered. "I'm glad we taught her to play."
Presently he whispered again,
"Les Barricades, mysterious. What inspired Couperin with that enchanted name? And only you and I know what it really means. Les Barricades Mysterious."
That night Lessingham lay alone in the lotus room. Its casements opened eastward on the sleeping woods and the sleeping bare slopes of Illgill Head. He slept soft and deep, for that was the house of Post Meridian and the house of peace. In the deep and dead time of the night, when the waning moon peered over the mountain shoulder, he woke suddenly. The silver beam shone through the open window on a form perched at the foot of the bed, a little bird, black, round-headed, short-beaked, with long, sharp wings, and eyes like two stars shining. It spoke and said,
"Time is..."
So Lessingham got up and muffled himself in a great cloak that lay on the chair beside the bed. He said,
"I am ready, my little martlet."
For that was the house of the heart's desire. Surely the martlet's eyes filled all the room with starlight. It was an old room, with lotuses carved on the panels and on the bed and chairs and roof beams. And in the glamour, the carved flowers swayed like water lilies in a lazy stream. He went to the window, and the little martlet sat on his shoulder. A chariot colored like the halo about the moon waited by the window, poised in air, harnessed to a strange steed. A horse, it seemed, but winged like an eagle, and its forelegs feathered and armed with eagle's claws instead of hooves. He entered the chariot, and that little martlet sat on his knee. With a whirr of wings, the wild courser sprang skyward. The sky about them was like the tumult of bubbles about a diver's ears, diving in a deep pool under a smooth, steep rock in a mountain cataract. Time was swallowed up in speed. The world reeled, and it was but as the space between two deep breaths till that strange courser spread wide his rainbow wings and slanted down the night over a great island that slumbered on a slumbering sea, with lesser isles about it. A country of rock mountains and hill pastures and many waters, all a glimmer in the moonshine. They landed within a gate crowned with golden lions. Lessingham came down from the chariot, and the little black martlet circled about his head, showing him a yew avenue leading from the gates. As in a dream, he followed her. End of The Induction.